Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our Sustainable Future Series 2021. We have lined up four topics at the core of sustainable investing, and for which we will provide you with the inspiring and fascinating insights of global experts. We are delighted that you're joining us today for The Future of Life on Land, which represents Goal 15 of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Our planet and its inhabitants are under threat. In the past 50 years, the world's human population has doubled, and we are using the Earth's resources at an unsustainable rate. At the core of the problem lies land use. Not only are natural habitats being destroyed, with wildlife populations having fallen by 60%, according to the OECD, land use is also the second largest source of emissions globally, behind only the energy sector. Such emissions are actually generated from land clearing activities and intensive farming practices. The unsustainable use of land is making it harder to meet global warming targets, especially as it removes a major consumer of carbon, trees. Next to costs aligned with pollution and global warming, we also need to consider other environmental costs, which are high when one considers the vital role ecosystems services play in all of our lives: the water we drink, the food we eat, the air we breathe. Our UBS philanthropy team found in their recently published Seeds of Change Guide for Philanthropists and Changemakers that global biodiversity funding is estimated to be up to $91 billion annually. This might sound a lot, but to reverse biodiversity's decline by 2030, research suggests the world needs to spend up to 10 times as much for the next 10 years. Public sector funding is not likely to increase soon, so it's up to all of us to act, whether as philanthropists, investors, business leaders, or individuals. I'm delighted to have three inspiring speakers with me here today and to hear from their efforts to help tackle this problem from an NGO, a business, and a financing perspective. Our first speaker is Dr. Susanna Padua, President of IPE, the Institute for Ecological Research in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and one of our global visionaries at UBS. Susanna has made it her life goal to protect Brazil's biodiversity, and a great part of this work is to reforest as many areas as possible. The Amazonian rainforest is one of the biggest deforestation fronts in the world. As one of the most complex ecosystems of our planet, the Amazon lost close to 20% of its forest over the past 50 years. And WWF predicts that one quarter of the Amazon will be without trees by the end of this decade if we keep going at the current rate of deforestation. Susanna will give us her views from an NGO perspective and as a leading environmentalist. Our second speaker and global visionary is Shara Tiku, who will guide us to the other part of the globe, to the rainforest in Southeast Asia. Shara is the CEO and co-founder of C16 Biosciences, a company focusing on the ever-growing problem of palm oil usage. Her company was founded with the objective of creating a sustainable, environmentally friendly alternative to conflict palm oil. Shara's company works with producers, refiners, traders, and consumers of palm oil with the aim to reduce the environmental footprint of palm oil production and protect precious natural land, wildlife, and resources in the process. Last but not least, my colleague Wayne Gordon, a senior investment analyst in our chief investment office and self-defined banker and farmer, will talk about our UBS views, where sustainable investment opportunities can be found and supported.
So So, Susanna, you initially studied visual communication and later began to work on environmental education, focusing on the protection of one of the most endangered species of primates in the world, the black lion tamarin. Why did you decide to change your career, and what did it take to do so?
I studied visual communication and I liked my profession. But to work with nature conservation in Brazil, it's a question of mission, because Brazil has an outstanding biodiversity with many hundreds of endangered species, unfortunately, and people don't seem to value. So the first person in the family who changed careers was my husband, and he went to study the black lion tamarin. I became an environmental educator, because I thought it was so important to touch people's hearts and minds, to value nature, to celebrate the richness that we have around us, and that people don't seem to value that much. So for me, being engaged in conservation of biodiversity, sustainability, and of course we amplified our array of areas that we work, because conservation is a complex issue, is a question of having a purpose in life. And this gives us a great deal of strength. And that was how we founded IPE, Institute for Ecological Research, which is an institution, an organization, a nonprofit that works for the conservation of biodiversity and sustainability in different sectors, government, private sector, and civil society.
That's wonderful. It's a very wonderful, inspiring path you took there. So as part of your work, you engage closely with communities in Brazil. Why is it so crucial to involve local and urban communities to successfully tackle environmental and climate issues, especially considering most people live in big cities today, so nature becomes less valued? And how do you bring environmental issues to the forefront of people's minds then?
We began working locally only with local communities where we had our projects, but we found that we needed to bring, for example, sustainable alternatives for them to improve their livelihoods. People are impoverished in Brazil, in rural Brazil, and how can you try to save a species from extinction if people are going through such hard lives and hardships in surviving. So, but the importance of dealing with people is because we are the ones who are causing all the destruction of nature. So we have to somehow shift our mindsets to include the conservation of what we have. And to our surprise, environmental education became a science within our organization, and we could assess and measure the impacts that we were having. And it became very clear that it is a path worth going forward with. And, of course, the large amount of people nowadays live in the big cities, far away from the real nature that we have in the country, or, you know, and this goes on worldwide. So I believe that education with communication is very, very important. People need to make the links between, you know, the rainfall and the protection of forests, or the quality of soil, where their food comes from, or the water protection that they need so much. All this depends on healthy ecosystems that can survive over time in a very positive and reassuring way. And we need to think long term. Nature demands that we think long term, and we have a tendency to be everything short sighted. And so this was a lesson that we learned. We need to invest in strategies that are somehow think in the future because what we do today may take some time, but it will have consequences.
Very true and very well said. Thank you so very much for this. Shara, after we heard from Susanna about her work in Brazil, we are shifting to your focus on the other side of the world, with your business tackling a problem particularly apparent in Southeast Asia. C16 Biotechnology, your company, uses a fermentation process to produce an oil that looks and functions like palm oil, but doesn't harm the planet. Can you give us some insights on how this technology works and what your business is particularly focusing on?
Yes, absolutely. So at C16, we combine processes from nature and biotechnology to produce a clean and safe oil that can replace palm oil or other vegetable oils in a way that is fully sustainable and traceable. Palm oil is in about 50% of products on supermarket shelves, from soaps and shampoos to makeup and packaged foods. And it's a unique oil with a particular structure that, which is sort of what makes it so ubiquitous and so hard to replace. So our solution is to use biomanufacturing instead of industrial agriculture to produce this safe, sustainable palm oil alternative. And really simply what that looks like is we use microorganisms found in nature. So microorganisms are things like yeast and algae and fungi, and we use yeast. So we use this yeast that's found in nature and we ferment the yeast. Fermentation is a technology that's been used in our food system for decades. And the product of that fermentation is an oil, which looks and functions just like palm oil.
Great. This sounds very fascinating. So you, as you already mentioned, the uses of palm oil or the specialty of it. So overall, the palm oil stake around the globe is very high. Why are large firms around the globe using palm oil, and why can't we simply replace palm oil? And maybe with this question I raise this, maybe you can explain us why we ended up with this huge move into palm oil problem in the first place.
Yeah. So I think the simple answer is that palm oil is a clear market failure. And that's one of the major reasons we've had such a hard time solving it within the constructs of optimizing around price and availability, especially in a world where it's essentially free. Nobody has to pay for the cost of carbon emissions. So the very simple problem with palm oil production is that the oil palm tree can only grow within about 5 to 10 degrees of the equator. Around the equator, we have naturally occurring tropical rainforest. So as demand for palm oil has exploded over the last 50 years, growers have moved into that area around the equator and engaged in slash and burn tactics to clear both the tropical rainforest and the carbon-rich peatland on which the rainforest sits. So this emits massive amounts of carbon dioxide into the air. Tropical deforestation linked to agriculture broadly emits 1.5 billion tons of carbon dioxide each year. So this is the problem that we face with palm oil, and the industry has known about this problem for over a decade. There are, at this point, 250 companies and 9 countries that have made public commitments to their customers and their shareholders that they're going to stop using this conflict palm oil, which is palm oil that's linked to deforestation. But they've essentially failed because they have no viable alternatives. So just really quickly to touch on that, why are there no viable alternatives? Why couldn't we switch to, say, another vegetable oil like coconut oil or soybean oil? The reason we're talking about oils and fats. So we're talking about the sort of lipid structure or fat structure of these products, which is really what drives their performance in everything from a soap product, how well it cleans, to a food product, how it cooks? What's the melting point? And there are two major things that have really driven up demand for palm oil over the last few decades. One is the broad switch to green fuels. So as we've been looking to clean up our Fossil Fuel Act and switch to green fuels, palm oil is a major input into biodiesel. And this is a big issue across Europe in particular. And many European countries have had to struggle with this concept, actually recently banning palm oil as a feedstock, as an input for biodiesel by 2030, and indicating that any inputs for biodiesel have to come from land which is not deforested, not burning this high carbon stock land. But the second major impact, or the second major driver, has been around our food systems. So fats and oils are used in our food systems largely for driving structure and performance. And historically, the industry had some tools which they could modify the profiles of various vegetable oils to get them to do what they wanted to do. These end products were called partially hydrogenated oils or trans fats. With time, we realized that there were some negative health implications with these tools and with trans fats, and they were banned. So when trans fats were banned by the FDA in 2012, essentially the whole industry switched over to palm oil, because palm oil actually had a natural structure which gave these food companies the performance goals that they were looking for. And that's one of the really great things about palm oil, is that it's got this natural profile. So it's driven up this huge demand, and essentially we do not have enough vegetable oil sources. We definitely don't have enough palm oil, and we don't have enough land to grow more vegetable oil sources to meet the needs of a growing planet, which is growing to 9 or 10 billion people by 2050. And so essentially we're at a point where we don't have a choice. We have to solve this problem. And agriculture alone clearly will not work, and we must think differently. And we believe that that looks like a radically different food and agriculture system than we have today, and that this system of using biomanufacturing, combining nature and biotechnology to produce clean, safe, traceable, sustainable food products is the way this system will look in the future.
Fantastic. That sounds very, you know, that was a real education piece for me, and I guess part of your work, although you're a business, but part of it is really the education bit as well. Wayne, we just had some fascinating insights into the work Susanna and Shara are doing to help the protection of rainforests of this world. In UBS CIO's recent publication, The Future of Earth, you looked at the topic of land. Could you provide us with some insights how we should look at this topic from an investment point of view? And why is the time now to focus on this topic?
Yeah, look, I think that's a terrific question. And, you know, just to throw a statistic out there, you know, deforestation and land conversion account for about somewhere between 10 to 12% of global greenhouse gas emissions. We know that countries are now much more focused on reaching their Paris targets. And so it's very clear to us that agriculture, and particularly the role that agriculture plays in such things as deforestation, as well as in developing countries, in areas of wealth and so forth, it's very clear to us that agriculture has this material role to play. When we look at it from an investment point of view, I think traditionally what we've found is that people have tended to look at investments for purely generating around outcomes. So, for example, we've often seen investments into plant science and so forth, largely based around trying to improve yields or trying to improve outcomes for farmers in particular. But what we're seeing now is a greater focus on things like not just increasing protein or not just increasing the amount of calories that people are consuming, but how those calories are being delivered along the supply chain, as well as the nutritional value of some of those some of the calories that are being produced. And so sort of as we look forward, there's this broader spectrum of opportunities where people can take different slices of the supply chains. In this particular example, looking at increasing productivity from the land we use, thinking about the condition of soils and so forth, and how soils can contribute to reducing carbon on a broader global basis, and then looking further down the chain to the types of products that we're consuming. So things like plant-based protein, things like lab-based proteins and so forth, the way in which we're storing food, the way in which we deliver that food to the consumer, the packaging that we're using, all these are now avenues that investors have open to them to be able to take part in what we see as a very vital industry to get right as we look towards keeping temperatures and improving overall biodiversity in the planet.
Thank you so very much. This was a fantastic, summary of the whole topic. And you actually already gave me a new kind of angle on this, because I introduced you as a self-defined banker and farmer. And I know farming is not only a family business for you, but personally, as we just hear, also a great interest of yours. And you brought up some topics which were also mentioned in the publication you were part of. It's the future of food, which was one of our most successful ones in the past years. So based on your own experience and your research and what you just told us, why do you actually think we still face funding gaps for climate smart agriculture solutions? That you just described, this is the way forward and it should become mainstream. So what is holding us back from reaching that?
Yeah, look, I think that's another great question. And I, when I think about it from my own experience, from my own farming background, we were very focused on traditional farming methods, and those farming methods tended to not take too much regard to the soil, the biodiversity, actually on a general basis, but overall soil health. We were involved in a lot of continuous cropping and the use of chemicals and so forth. And we found that as we became more aware of some of the side effects that a lot of this sort of industrial farming was bringing about, that we had to move towards a more sustainable model. Now, traditionally, when we've been investing in agriculture and so forth, as I said earlier, it's been mainly focused on delivering higher yields or certain benefits to farmers without thinking about those sort of side effects that might come from it. I think now when we look at agriculture holistically, there has been a significant shift. And that significant shift has not just come because we've recognized that some of these practices are not sustainable, but also it's come in part with also other technology. So now we have, for example, an ability to track things at very close with satellites and using certain monitoring technology to better use water, to improve the monitoring of deforestation and so forth. They're able to use satellite imagery. And so all of these sort of technological advances we've seen with the sort of fourth generation jump that we've had has put a lot of power into not just the farmer's hands, but also the consumer's hands. So now people very much expect to have a better understanding of where their food comes from, how it's moved along the supply chain and so forth. What's the nutritional value of that food? And not only that, but also some really clever people people have been working on some opportunities in developing markets. Because, of course, Bill Gates made this great statement that once, if you care about the poor, you care about agriculture. And we have to remember that a number of these advancements we've seen on the technology side are still only just starting to filter through into developing countries, just because they don't have the access to 4G networks or now even 5G networks. So as we move forward, even this technology is beginning to drip feed down into those developing countries. For example, there's some great opportunities in sharing machinery, for example, in some of these countries. So farmers can get access to new and better technology. I think that both from the commercial side, as well as from government, as well as private investors who are very keen to look at this. It's very clear to us that these touch points are now starting to be recognised and people are starting to get interested, not just in improving yields in agriculture, but improving the way in which we produce, making sure that we keep deforestation to a minimum, because we know to hit our climate targets, to improve the livelihoods of people, we need to improve the environment. We need to make sure that that sort of circle of biodiversity continues to work in favour of high productivity. So I think these things are now the key focus of investors, and we're seeing this across the spectrum, not just in public markets, but also in private markets, and also individuals wanting to look at these areas which traditionally could have been left behind.
Very well. Yeah, it's not only an investor perspective. What I really liked is that you also brought the consumer part into play, because I think we as consumers, the more information we have, the more critical we become, actually. That leads me over to a question again for Susanna. So because every 6 seconds, people clear a football pitch-sized area of tropical forest for commodities such as cattle ranching in Brazil. So what are sustainable alternatives to the deforestation in your view?
I felt very, very hopeful with Wayne's speech, because what happens is if an investment bank such as UBS is interested in seeds of change and putting together materials, it is a wonderful step forward. All of this loss of biodiversity and deforestation is going on, but I believe that people are somehow more concerned and active in bringing up solutions. When we started more than 30 years ago, we were considered eccentric, and even among our family members. And now nobody questions the purpose of what we are doing. But the deforestation goes on, and what is, for me, the most important thing is for us to invest in technology. We need to come up with products that have the whole supply chain in a sustainable way of production, so that the forest can be more valuable standing than cut. Cattle and soy do not take into consideration all the biodiversity, and it's just cutting and selling the wood illegally because it's not permitted in the Amazon, for example. But it's all wrong, and only very few people have profits, not the entire population, local or even national population. And the world is losing a great deal. So for me, the destruction of the forest is key for us to think of a way that we need to stop. We need to stop it urgently, because this will have an effect in everything, in the water, in the cloud forming, agriculture, as Wayne mentioned. In Brazil, there are studies that show that there are floating rivers, the Amazon, with the evaporation of the water and the cloud forming. It takes the water to where the agriculture is happening. So we should stop. IPE, the organization that we founded, has been planting tremendously. I mean, this is a new trend that companies are putting, investing in carbon sequestration and compensating their emissions. And we have been planting tremendously in a planned way. And there is one set of data that we are putting together that shows that if you plant in a like corridors or forming buffer zones, in very programmed and scientifically based way, you can save with 20% of recovery of what was there in the original state, you can perhaps save around 70% of the biodiversity. So this is one of the, for me, one of the main venues for us to change what is happening. We need, what is so important of involving investors and a bank like UBS that has so much credibility, is that we need somehow to come up with economic value of nature. For me, nature has an intrinsic value. Nobody needs to convince me of the importance of protecting nature. But this in the real world, when you get to local communities, to local places, somehow you need to bring economic value so that it makes sense for people to change their ways of life, to change their habits. And so I'm very optimistic with being part of the story that UBS is putting together. And I hope this has a lovely future and a promising one.
So do we. Thank you so very much. But this actually shows what is at the center of your work and why it's so important. It's the education part. So, but how then, what you just said, I mean, it's a cooperation with UBS and with other players here, but can you give us an example how philanthropy and investments help your work and halt deforestation? Is it to further broaden education a bit, or where exactly, you know, are these investments, are these monies needed at the moment?
There are some options for investments, in my view. Education for us has become it's part of the DNA of the organization from the very start. Our initial team was composed of very young people, still in undergraduate levels, and we encouraged everyone to go for master's, PhDs, and so forth until we found that we had to somehow put together a school. And IPE stands for the most beautiful tree that happens everywhere in Brazil, that blooms during our winter, July, August, September. And so what the metaphor that we use is that we want to spread through education seeds of IPE all over Brazil and Latin America. So the people that come to us for short courses, masters, and MBA, because we also have a sustainability in the business world, that we want to change the way people act in the business world as well, to put sustainability as a priority. So these people that come to us and that are somehow we can influence can go back to where they come from and give contributions. And we have several examples of people who have changed the unwanted realities, the realities that were destructive, and they have put together projects that changed totally. But investments, as you have asked, the first investment we received from a Brazilian company ever, because we used to only fundraise through foundations and already organizations that funded conservation. But the first, and we wanted very, very badly to have private sector involved, because we really believe that the private sector, with the NGOs, with the passion that the NGOs bring to the work, we can change the world. I mean, we can really make a difference. But we had a very hard time to receive our first funding. And it was from a Brazilian company that distributes goods to supermarkets all over Brazil. And they gave us the Amazon, the education boat in the Amazon. And they just, this was many years ago, but they just launched a book telling the story of the boat and how it was a good impact for the company. And we also have another example of Havaianas, the flip-flops of Brazil, the rubber flip-flops, that they stamp Brazilian species on the soles of their sandals, and they give us a percentage. So this is a cause-related marketing. And another example, the final one that I can give, there are many, but I have to summarize here. The final one that I can give is through reforestation. Many companies are coming up with funds to do reforestation. And it was very interesting, because this is part of the modern way of management, and the B-plus companies and the companies that want to make a difference wherever they are, because it's not a mandatory somehow demand, but they are doing it because they want to somehow contribute to a better world. And we are getting an increase, a tremendous increase in the demand for reforestation, which for us is fantastic. And we really believe that it is part of our mission, and we are bringing back the biodiversity that had been destroyed before. And we're trying very hard to avoid deforestation in the Amazon. So we work in several biomes, in four biomes of Brazil. Brazil is continental, and the realities are very different. But so in the Atlantic Forest, the Pantanal, the Cerrado, we tried to avoid deforestation. In fact, enrich the nature. And in the Amazon, we try very hard to avoid deforestation. So let me say this again, because it's wrong. We work in, today, we began in the Atlantic Forest, and we now work in four different biomes of Brazil. Brazil is continental. And in many of the biomes, we try to recover, regenerate the forest to bring back the biodiversity. But in the Amazon, our biggest work is to avoid deforestation and to work with the protected areas and the communities around them to make the protected areas really important for everyone, not only for us that live far away from them, but for local people who can see gains and be involved in their protection. So, of course, in those cases, we work very straight in straight relationship with the government as well. But we do believe that we need to integrate our efforts, government, private sector, and the civil society organizations, in order to make a difference. And I'm very happy that we can really count on the support of UBS to promote this change. And we're here. We want to contribute in whichever way we can.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much. Yeah, I like the story that you started small, and hopefully, or, you know, the more we talk about it, the more we educate people about this, the more global awareness will be created, and the more global influence can hopefully help your cause. Shara, your technology sounds very promising for helping to save the forest, especially in Southeast Asia. What is the potential scale of your business? You touched a bit about that on this earlier in one of your answers, but how much can it contribute to halt the problem? And what are the main challenges your business faces with this huge task?
So palm oil today is somewhere between a $60 billion and $100 billion industry, and vegetable oils more broadly are a quarter of a $1 trillion industry. So if we just zoom into palm oil alone, which is the major driver of deforestation in this space, it's about 60 million metric tons produced per year of this product. And about 5% of that comes from freshly deforested land. So I think many people have said, oh, a lot of the land has already been burned. Indonesia and Malaysia have been radically transformed from rainforest into palm oil plantations. But the demand for this has not slowed down. In fact, it's continuing to grow. And the impact of that is that deforestation is starting to shift westward. So now we're seeing parts of Africa around the equator and Central and South America across the equator become the new targets for deforestation. So I think it's crystal clear that the damage is not done and that we must continue to stop deforestation, which is, again, our goal by providing a better alternative to deforestation and a better alternative to making this product. So 5% of palm oil production each year coming from freshly deforested land, that's about 3 to 5 million metric tons of product per year. And I think that's a very reasonable target for us to reach in the next few years here. It's ambitious, but it's definitely possible. Fermentation has been scaled globally in industries like beer and ethanol and many other products. And I think to that point, the biggest challenge or perhaps the biggest motivation is for us to move quickly and get to scale as rapidly as possible so that we can provide our solution and demonstrate that there is, in fact, a real viable solution to this palm oil problem, to the 250 companies who have stated very clearly to their customers and shareholders that they want to switch away from conflict palm oil.
Fantastic. Thank you so very much. This was, a very, very fantastic insight. So, Wayne, so now that we learned about an NGO and a business perspective on ways to tackle the problem of deforestation, and also what you talked about before, you mentioned already various solutions, how investors can look at this topic. But what is actually your top pick when you come to the future of land? Where and how should we invest to support the future of our Earth?
So that's a really good question. I think it can go in a multitude of directions, but just to narrow it down a little bit, there's a couple of great conclusions that came from the Seeds of Change, and that was around the role that philanthropy can actually play here, because similar to what we've just discussed, I think it has to be this sort of connected effort between the private sector, governments, that sort of philanthropic support. There was one quote that came from it from Holger Schmidt, where he talked about the need for philanthropy to move away from sort of investing in sort of remediation, direct remediation ideas, and to sort of find its role as an enabler for broad-based investments and sort of investing in that sort of more fundamental change. And I think that fits really nicely into where I see investors focusing in a few key areas. One in particular is engagement, where we're not, as investors, investing in, new ideas or new technology, but we're actually engaging in companies to help them shift the direction, perhaps, of where they're going currently, and being active in that context. So looking at those companies which have a significant impact, potentially some of the commodity producers and so forth, and working with them to move towards a more sustainable production system. And then, of course, there's the elements of measurement. to be able to go to the broader investor community, you have to show these outcome sort of based and scalable investment solutions. Now they require very good measurement, and I go back to something I said previously with respect to the ability for soils to store carbon, the ability for farmers to take advantage of that carbon that they're storing and be encouraged to do more of it through price mechanisms and so forth. And that requires very accurate measurement, and it requires these systems that have good, strong governance and accounting strategies behind them. So, and probably the last thing I think that investors need to broaden their and think about is around the supply chain. So minimizing waste, improving our diets, thinking about nutrition at one end, and thinking about how the production system needs to change at the other end to fulfill these sort of demand requirements, as well as the need for us, as we said earlier, to stop deforestation and to improve the land that we're using and to decrease the contribution that agriculture agriculture is having on things like climate change. So I think those areas are where, as an investor, as a philanthropist, this is where I would be most focused on. And then as you open up the can of in that particular segment, there's a whole variety of angles that you can take. So I think that's where when we went through the Seeds of Change report, I think that's where we tried to focus on as we opened up this particular bucket, how we had a number of opportunities within that. And I think engagement, measurement, and these sort of outcome-based scalable investments that bring about this fundamental systemic changes that are needed to reduce emissions, to improve agriculture's overall contribution to meeting our climate change targets.
Thank you very much, Susanna, Shara and Wayne, for your time and fascinating insights today. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your interest. Now it's over to you. As an investor, entrepreneur, consumer or a philanthropist, you can help to address the urgent issues of deforestation, pollution and climate change. Start by discovering what resonates with you, explore the issues, and please get in touch to discuss your questions.